This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 673, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
The world is a vampire. Sent to drain. Secret destroyers. Hold you up to the flames. And what do I get for my pain? Betrayed desires. And a piece of
the... Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 673. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and Josh Flanagan has returned.
I have returned to you now at the turn of the tide.
Are you tanned? Are you rested?
No. And... No. Whoop, nope. Nope. No. No, I went
have
with my
kid. Have you ever been tanned?
When I was a little kid, I actually did live in Florida, like ages 2 to 4. And at that point, I was tanned for me. Which, we now know, really bad for kids. Especially very fair-skinned kids like me. Also, I remember a great deal of sunburning in the early part of my life, which again, we now know, real bad.
So definitely keep going to Florida then.
Well, I don't plan to make a big habit of it. However, there are some things about it that are good.
Well, I hope you enjoyed your vacation.
Florida, there are some things about it that are good.
We are iFanboy, and every week we read a bunch of comics, and one of us picks their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book, some other books we read, the patron picks, some powers, listener mail if we've got time. We have a good old fun family Christmas.
Woo! Holy shit. Where's the Tylenol?
So, spoiler warning, there'll be some spoilers. This is a review show. So if you're worried about that, exercise some caution, use the show notes. This week, Josh, you had the pick, and I thought it was a pretty strong week.
It was a strong week.
Compared to last week, for sure.
Yeah. You know what? It's funny because I actually was reading my books kind of steadily last week. Anyways, pick of the week is The Green Lantern number 5. I'm going to get to that in a second. I was determined not to get way behind on my books, so I was sort of reading my comics here and there when I had a couple of minutes. You know, like at night I'd read one or two, and then wherever. And I was really enjoying that. I was like, this is great. Just read a little bit of comic books and move on instead of like, quick, read. Okay, I got two more. You know, and I did find myself, I was like, I'm really enjoying reading these comics. And it's not that I don't, but just with a little breathing space, it was nice because I was like, I do still like comics. It's not just the job, I suppose.
It's a different experience when you're not reading it for the show, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. However, then I did have thoughts, and I was like, these thoughts are all wasted. It's just me, and I could talk to my wife about it, but she does not give a shit. No. And I could call you, but you're like, we already did the show, dude. I'm not doing this for
you. Already happened. I don't – two shows twice. I don't talk about books twice.
It's not true. We've done it. I actually emailed Connor a couple of times. I was like, this is really good. He's like, I know. And I was like, all right, we can still talk to each other off the mic. That's good. Anyway, I was really excited to get back here today, for sure. So The Green Lantern number 5 was the first book that I read where I thought, well, that's a pick. Like I got to the last page. And went, that's a pick right there. Now, I still had about half of my books to go after that, and there were several others, and we'll get to some of those today, where I thought that could be a pick, too.
Yes. This was a week where I don't even know what I would have done, because there was probably five books I could have made to pick.
You know what it was a week for this week? It was a week for comics! Exclamation point.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Comics.
Just fun comics! Exclamation point. Like, you'd see on a spinner rack, and it was that feeling a lot, and I really like that. I want to coin that. Put that on a t-shirt. Okay, so the Green Lantern, the thing was, it started out and it was that feeling of, wait, did I miss an issue? And I was pretty sure I didn't, but I never know with me. And I thought, I don't think I do, and I think that this is intentional, which is a really, and it was. As you get through the issue, you find out that, you know, you're sort of, at the beginning, you're, Hal Jordan is stuck in a vampire world, what the heck's going on? And then at a certain point later on, it's, you know, like 2 weeks ago, or 2 months ago, or whatever it was, and you sort of get the explanation for what it is. Now, we have complained about this feeling with other books before, but in those cases, it was not intentional, or if it was intentional, it wasn't done well. But with this, and a little bit of this goes with, like, I give credit to the writer. I say, well, I trust Grant Morrison to, you know what he's doing. And he did. But I was really interested in making that distinction. Because
it's all about the execution.
And yeah.
He's really good at that Aaron Sorkin thing where you start at the end of the mm-hmm. story and move backwards. That's true. Structure.
Because basically you are right away, you're in the story. There's a big thing going on. It seems like everything has changed. The only thing that hasn't changed, the only thing that really feels consistent in this, though, is that when I read this, I go, that's Hal Jordan. Mm-hmm. And Hal Jordan is not a character who's very consistent. I think it's difficult for people to get a handle on him. We've talked about this a lot, to sort of make him feel like he is the way he is. And it happens every once in a while. It comes up, but there's been, it's almost like there's as many comics where I'm like, this doesn't really ring as true Hal Jordan to me. But that is the thing about this book that I think does, is that it's Hal Jordan, space cop. He's the cop who, runs afoul of the captain, Jordan, but he's trying to do the right thing, but he's not necessarily going to follow the rules to do that. And that's what we see in this. And there's this really sort of fun, crazy action zombie vampire world that he's going through and trying to survive. And it looks like it's a test. And then you find out that he's infiltrated the Black Stars due to an order from one of the Guardians, which the Guardian scene was actually really good. I liked how it was sort of, he's like, well, it's you, Jordan. You're going to do what else? You're going to do whatever you want anyway, but this is what you need to do.
Yeah, I mean, we had talked previously about how he had basically murdered that guy. You know, we all saw it. He had a gun and how crazy that was. And here it's revealed that that was done on purpose. I mean, I guess he still killed the guy, but on orders from the Guardians, basically, you know, do whatever you have to do, kill someone to get picked, to get recruited by the Black Stars, which is basically like an evil Green Lantern Corps. And so that's what that was before. And I also just really like, we talked about it before, but this issue was especially like it, that this is a very weird book.
Yes.
And if any book in DCU can be super weird and make sense, it's Green Lantern, because he's constantly on alien worlds dealing with alien people and planets and civilizations, and they're not all just humanoids. You know, it's not like Star Trek.
But it usually
isn't. It's
really
weird. Yeah.
And that's the thing.
Nobody works for this.
Yeah, nobody takes it weird. And then the other half of that is that, boy, anytime Liam Sharp wants to draw an alien world, go for it. The renderings of the sort of landscapes on this gothic vampire planet are amazing. And then we do get one more shot of sort of how he draws Oa. I there should be some sort of drawing space Oa Eisner. Every time he draws that world, I'm like, my God, look what he's doing. Like, it's this drawing is better than whatever like Lucas came up with for The Whole City is a Planet, that one.
Coruscant,
of course.
Yeah,
but like it's so good. I don't. You know, it's
a lot of lights everywhere. There's floating lights. It feels very alien too. It just, everything about this feels weird. And you know, his work didn't necessarily work on a book like Wonder Woman.
Yeah,
but it really works here. And also, I want to mention that he does a really terrific, I don't know if it's intentional or not, Alan Davis impression on the cover. I really thought that was an Alan Davis cover. Based on the drawing of Hal, and I kept looking for his name in the credits, but it wasn't. It's Liam Sharp. Huh. He's really really good.
Yeah,
for this type of story. And you're right. I mean, this feels like a bit, you know, two-fisted Hal Jordan adventures, where he has to run through a gauntlet. It's almost like the end of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, where he's got to collect these three items, and to do that, he's got to run through a gauntlet of challenges, including a really creepy ghost scene where they really utilize modern coloring to make it seem like there's these creepy ghosts through his visor. And it was a really fun book.
Yeah.
A really fun book.
And yeah, it's totally, you know, this feels like a British 70s comic.
Yeah.
And then finally, you know, like I think the thing that really did seal it, though, is that, you know, the challenge at the end is that in order to get into the Black Stars, they give him one more challenge, and that is he has to kill Adam Strange. And I was like, ooh, a good cliffhanger.
Well, first of all, terrific cliffhanger, Adam Strange.
I made a noise. I went, ooh, you know.
I don't know. You probably didn't listen to the last week's episode yet.
Not yet, no.
Ryan and I talked about the fact that one of the benefits, the unforeseen benefits of the Bendis' DC run is that he keeps utilizing Adam Strange. Mm-hmm. And we're in an Adam Strange-assance. And then he shows up here, and I was like, he's everywhere. It's great. He's wearing the proper helmet here too.
Yes, he is. I noticed that. I was like, oh, this looks like Adam Strange with his gunslinger leather belt and of course the great pirate boots that all comic book characters should have when possible.
He looks like the true Adam Strange with the Silver Age helmet, the fin helmet, and all this. I just love that he is showing up everywhere now.
Me too. I love Adam Strange. I don't know why. I have no reason for it. You know, it's a man out of his world. It's the fin. It's, you know, retro modern. It's
It's that 60s space aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we've talked about this book several times, and it's been I don't know if it's been picked before. It might have been, but it's been close. This is a great series. It's not. I don't hear anyone talk about it. I don't read about it. I don't know how it's selling, but hopefully well enough that it gets to continue for a while, because this is terrific.
It is. It's just, it's fun. And it's one of those, it doesn't come out every 2 weeks. It comes out, you know, on a monthly schedule. So it feels a little more special when it does. And I look forward to it. Like, what's this going to be here? You know, I don't know what I'm going to open up, but I know it's going to be imaginative. And I know there's going to be a lot of effort and passion on the page.
Mm-hmm. Like
there's no half-assing happening here. And even if it gets a little sort of pulpy and over-dramatic, like, it's intentional. And it really works
for the character and the setting.
Yeah, I really like the intention.
So I told you to read Justice League 19, which you did, clearly.
I did read Justice League 19.
What did you think about it?
It was pretty good. And I thought, you know, maybe another week I might even make this pick of the week. But I thought that's too... that's too. You told me to read a thing, and I was like, maybe I do love it, but I'm gonna go with I really enjoyed it for the most part. Again, comics with an exclamation point. It was
yeah. I mean, this was, I haven't loved this run, and I don't really love anything having to do with the metal storyline, which is, this is what it's all about. Mm-hmm. However, this particular issue I thought was the best issue of the series so far, in that so the Justice League is fighting the Legion of Doom, who are trying to release Perpetua, one of the original. I mean, that's where it all gets muddled, and I start to not lose interest. But
yeah,
here the Justice League enlists the help of Mr. Mixius Piddalek, who you saw his truck earlier.
Yeah.
This week.
Clitches Piddalem. God, I could say that all day.
So they need help on a cosmic level scale, so they wait. This is the time Mr. Piddalek shows up to torment Superman. So they confront him and say, "Hey, wouldn't you rather help us fight these people instead?" And he's like, "Oh, that's interesting." And so
that was a really good reverse. Things.
Yeah, it was really fun, and I really love the Jorge Jimenez art. He has a really interesting voice and style. It's a little stylized. Good action.
It's an unusual or unexpected choice for DC Comics to put him on Justice League at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like the sort of surreal stuff that he got to draw with Mitch Spitlick, where the city sort of comes alive, and, you know, they get to do the "your building just ate my building" gag, which, whatever, give up a page for that. I'm fine with that. I dug that, and I really did like the bit where, basically, they're trying to explain it to him. They also, the fight sort of starts, and he's like, "We're not here to get you. We're here for your help." And Mixus Pitlick like gets real for a second. She's like, "You can stop. I know what you mean. You know, like, I've been through this. What is it?" And he goes to help them. It was super unexpected, because it's really, you know, Mixus Pitlick's tough. It's not tough in the Silver Age, and the Silver Age is perfect. It's tough now as a sort of thing to bring in. that also hasn't been done a billion times, but sort of fits with a slightly more modern aesthetic, and I really like the twist on that.
So Superman has to go into some portal, and he comes back older and different costume, and he's like, come with me, guys. It's all great. I fixed everything. And then
which is always a red flag.
Yeah, so, and then they're all sort of there's different versions of them. Basically, it's a trap because Superman is revealed to be trapped somewhere.
Sure. You know what the best part of that page is? The page where he walks in, he's in all the white suit like Gandalf the White, which yeah. I referenced earlier without meaning to. The second and third panel of that page, the knock knock, and then the Batman and Martian Manhunter head turn with that little motion line over his eye and the squinted eye. I was like, that's great. That's great comics right there. That's storytelling.
I also love the Flash's face as they're going through the portal.
However, just because I want to give with both hands, there's a bit where at the beginning Superman's flying around and they come upon the group of firefighters who are the Justice League in disguise because Wonder Woman learned a spell, and then they cut to the sort of team shot on the title page. Yeah. Why is Flash sitting on the ground? That's a dumb choice.
He's tired. He runs a lot.
Nah, he's like, what's up, man? I'm going to sit here. I just was like, there's no reason to be sitting on the ground.
I guess, honestly, they just ran out of room, I think. But
yeah, no, it was a compositional choice, but it caught
So
me.
One of the things interesting about this, it's just one of those dumb comics editorial problem things, is that when Starman was brought back a couple issues ago, Jim Chung drew him and he had he's got that platinum hair and they gave him this like old craggly face. It looked like he'd spent like years out in the desert and nowhere near moisturizer forever. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting because he's an older character. He's from the past. So it set him off from the other characters very easily visually. But every other artist draws him as young and pretty. It's bizarre. It's like, this is the kind of thing that this is an editorial problem. This mm-hmm. is an editor's mistake. It's just bizarre that they gave him such the unique look when they brought him back originally in however many issues ago. And now ever since then, whoever's drawing the book has just drawn him as a, 25-year-old model. And it's bizarre to me.
Yeah.
But I thought this was a ton of fun. And it's a nice respite from, the rest of the story is, I don't really care about the metal stuff and the source wall and all that stuff. But
yeah.
This particular bit of it is fun, and the twist at the end was interesting. The cliffhanger was interesting. So
there's time travel, relativity. There's sort of big, silly stakes. There's that drawing of the sort of white, golden Superman is just wonderful.
It's great.
It's great.
So, one of the many comics I could have made pick was Doomsday Clock number 9, which we just joked about last week. Remember that book? Jeff Johns, Gary Frank. And this is the issue I think everyone was waiting for when they first announced it.
Yeah.
9 issues into 12. So
I got to that first page and I thought, please don't do a straight up like I thought they were going to do the Fearful Symmetry issue or something.
Yeah.
Like the whole way. And I was like, that's too gimmicky. And then it wasn't that. It was, all right, here's the superheroes that we know dealing with this in this style. John Constantine's weird accent notwithstanding. Everything else was... It's very cool. It's just very cool.
Basically, I don't know how smart it is to send essentially every superhero in the DCU to Mars to fight Dr. Manhattan, but
whatever.
They're all in several spaceships flying to Mars, and that was awesome, that little sequence where you mm-hmm. see all the different people in the ships and all the groupings and everything. But they confront Dr. Manhattan on Mars, and it doesn't go all that well. And I
love that Guy Gardner is that like, let's make him the guy who loses his temper and screws things up. And I was like, I know it's a cliche, but I love it when it happens.
So, yeah, it still doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense. It still feels like this was where DC was going until they went another way, but they had to finish the book
mm-hmm.
because it doesn't feel relevant to what's happening in anything else. And I don't even mean from an event standpoint, just from a general aesthetic. This seemed to be where DC was heading when they published Rebirth.
Yep.
And Jeff Johns was in charge. He was setting the tone, reestablishing all the heroes. It seemed like we were leading at this point, and then at some point along the line, he was no longer CCO, and then they went off. DC went another way.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is why the book feels weird to me, because I don't know what it all means, other than it's a really fun book to read, and it looks gorgeous.
That's all that matters.
Yeah.
Yeah, this sort of combination Gary Frank, Dave Gibbons thing is really interesting to look at just the whole way through and sort of how he's doing it. And I don't know.
Yeah, because like, you wish he had more room to breathe sometimes.
Yeah, but I think that
they're sticking to 9-panel grid, but it is leading to very interesting work.
Well, I think that, but that's, I mean, that's part of the feeling of the book. You know, Alan Moore was intentional. There's a claustrophobia to this, you know, but also like a, it's a simplicity. Like you have to do the work when it's like this. You can't rely on tricks really, other than, you know, very basic ones. Right. And it is a book where if you flip through it, it's a shit ton of talking heads, which is usually a no-go, but it works.
And also you can see why it takes so long, because he's doing 9 drawings a page.
With 1,000 characters.
Yeah.
And a lot of stuff going on, and they're good drawings. He's so good.
He's incredibly good.
Yeah, he is.
He's worth the wait.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want to fill an artist to speed the book up. I mean, as much as it's frustrating that it's so slow, it's frustrating that, because I would prefer DC going this direction, but obviously it's not, so it's fine. Uh-huh. But it's worth it. If it's going to just be this book on its own, like an Elseworlds book, then that's fine. Just let it come out when it comes out.
It's totally fine.
I thought one of the stories of book comics this week was that there was a lot of really terrific art.
Mm-hmm. There was.
I want to talk about Batman number 66, Tom King, and the art of Jorge Fornas, which I've mentioned before. He did some piece of some book, but he is so fucking good.
There's a lot of Mazzucchelli here.
Absolutely.
And I love the question. I don't want a lot of him, and I think it can get overdone really easily. But when they get it just right, you know, it's just him sitting in a room with Selena. It's, you know, that's the question.
Well, this is another dream issue. I know you don't like those.
However, I know, but it was good.
It was really good. The question and Selena's conversation, again, returning to the idea of the meta commentary of comics, in which, mm-hmm. you know, she remembers in a meeting in the Batman Year One, he remembers a meeting back in the Golden Age comics, and they, you know, it's different. And, I just love the questions, body language, his outfit. I love everything about him.
Yeah.
And obviously Fornes is doing Mazzucchelli, whether intentionally or not, but he's really good at it. And there's some really gorgeous pages here.
And really nice composition. There's that sort of, he's got canted angles in a couple of places, just really beautifully. There's almost something on every single page.
I love the shot of when Selena's coming down and they're doing the upside down thing, and that really long skinny panel that was terrific. There's a really great panel of just the two of them in the shadow, sort of like, you know, about to embrace. There's just terrific, even the action stuff where they're jumping off the buildings. But then the sort of star for me was Selena and the question. And also that sequence where Batman's getting up from being hurt and he's facing all the different villains was really great too. Mm-hmm. It's a good book.
Yeah, it really was. And I was thinking as I was reading, I was like, this is still another dream sequence one, but this one completely works for me because it wasn't weird for the sake of weird. It was, you know, I felt like we were doing something.
Well, because basically it's the two of them talking.
Yeah.
And everything else is sort of representation of their conversation. So it's not like, it could not be a dream sequence.
Not a lot of that. In a lot of those kind of books, you get a lot of stuff like, why is this happening? What is this? The person in the middle of it. And that wasn't happening. Right. You know, it was a conversation that was moving towards some truth or something, you know, something that was useful to the story overall.
Well, yeah, he's clearly,
colored by Dave Stewart didn't hurt.
It's all good. And a great Doc Shaner variant cover.
Uh-huh.
We just talked about
4 books in a row. All with exceptional art, all from DC Comics, a place where we always complain about art.
Yeah, no, that's true. They have an art problem.
Except when they don't.
Right. And the high profile books tend to be okay. But, you know, Dan DiDio said in Comics Pro that they were going to focus back on house style. So who knows what that means?
It means cheaper artists. That's what it means. Because
fewer books, which we'll get to in a minute after we take a minute to talk about how to help Ty Fanboy.
I don't know that I completely mind that as an overall strategy. I will say that because of patreon.com/ifanboy, there is, to me, a more of a pressing, like, I really feel like I should read more of these. And because of it, we're all reading more books than we ever were, which is odd this long in. If you'd asked me 5 years ago where how many books you'd be reading now, oh, Josh is reading 4 books a week and it says deal with it.
Well, there was a time on the show many, many, many years ago where you were down to like – it felt like you were down to like 10 books.
Yeah.
So like on the show, it was, like Ron and I were carrying the load because you'd be like, I read 2 books. I'm like, you got to read more, Josh. I need help.
Listen, that was very early on. It's been a long time. But I'm reading a lot now. And one of the reasons that I'm doing that is because we've got so many helpful patrons. Patrons. I always get that wrong. Patrons on Patreon. And you can be a part of this. Basically, the idea is that in this world with so many things making content and so much distraction and honestly not really a way to make it big off of this stuff in the same way that you used to. Then you have to decide – to make it big really means paying bills. But it still takes time. And if you like something and you want to support it, then you can show that directly, which means that, you know, we owe you. So you can go over there and we have stretch goals. We've been coming through on a lot of our goals after we reach certain milestones for a while. That leads to the Booksplode shows and the Talksplode shows and stuff like that. And of course those t-shirts, that was part of it too, which I will get to. Our next stretch goal is the addition of a non-monthly comics podcast, a sort of the all media podcast, but in a smaller version. On a monthly version, and then we will also upload all the missing full length video shows and minis to the YouTube channel and re-embed them on the website, which is, but you know, part of me wants to reach that goal, part of me doesn't.
It's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. If you want to be a little more direct about it, you can go over to ifanboy.threadless.com. There are 7 designs there. Nothing makes sense. Nothing matters is the big standout, but there's also some other niche ones. We are in the process right now of narrowing down a couple of designs because we did say we would get somewhere up there. So we're working on it.
Yeah, we've actually got two we're talking about. Two designs we're talking about.
So
hopefully before Comic-Con.
I'm not going to say look for those soon, but it's a thing. It's definitely an ongoing discussion. We just don't want to throw you something that's crappy, so we want to make sure that it's right for you guys.
I just bought my second Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters t-shirt.
Why?
Because I bought one in sort of black, and then I was like, I also want like a poppier one, so I bought a royal blue one.
Huh. I understand
depending on
that.
My mood, you know?
I totally understand that. It's hard to – I never used to dress in all black, but sometimes I do now. I'm like, yeah, I do look pretty cool.
No, I like black t-shirts a lot, but I also wanted one like if I felt like I was in like a four-color comics mood to have like a royal blue and red and yellow one.
That's Connor with an exclamation point.
That's right.
And if none of that works for you, you can go to ifanboy.com/support. You'll find a direct PayPal link there. We still have that if you think, hey, you know what? This whole thing is about, like, do you like the things we do? Do you want to help support it? Do you want to show how it's valuable to you? We both do this for other shows we like. It's the same way you donate to NPR or PBS or, you know, something much more intelligent than us, basically. And you also find
Smart.
A link. At ifanboy.com/am. We're intelligent. It's just being wasted on useless things. You go to ifanboy.com/amazon. You'll find links to buy the books on our Booksplode. And every week, the pick of the week is linked there. Or you can just find a general link to get over there. And the way the affiliate accounts work is that we get a little bit of that of your purchases over there. So we thank the folks who do that too. Let's move on to more comic books because there are more. Another possible pick of the week contender.
Yeah.
There's two more for me. Is Conan the Barbarian number 4 by Jason Aaron and the amazing Gerardo Zaffino, who I...
Well, that's... Good.
I couldn't tell. I looked. I was like, is he related to Jorge Zaffino? And I couldn't find information on it one way or another. This book was beautiful.
Well, that's the thing. Talking about art, so I saw it wasn't Mahmoud Asfar, and I was like, aw.
I did the same thing, and then moments later, I was like, meh.
Well, I didn't love the first page and the second page. And then I got to the third page, and I was like, whoa. And then I just kept going, whoa, over and over. And by the end of it, with all due respect to Mahmoud Asfar, who's terrific, I was like, if he was a new artist, I'd be fine with this. This is terrific.
Well,
are these coming out
every 2 weeks?
Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, if these are the guys that are switching off,
yeah,
do it.
Great. I mean, it looks like nothing else on the stands. It looks very European.
Yeah.
I love the story of, you know, it's a classic Conan cliche, but it's a great one. You know, old man Conan finally gets the throne and hates the bureaucracy of running the country and just wants to kill people. So he starts sneaking out. He puts a mask on. It's really creepy.
That design of the mask with his scary eyes, it's great.
So he goes out and starts like acting basically like a vigilante in his own kingdom and at night killing murderers and rapists and kidnappers and with his lion sidekick.
It's Conan as
so
Punisher.
Good.
It was so good. As you go through it, it kept getting, I was like, this is just, oh, it was like, even if it was only art to look at, it was so good. It didn't even matter, but the rest of it, and you know, no disrespect to Jerry Duggan, but this is the better Conan book.
And also, I had a thing. I had a point, and as it was coming out, it disappeared. Mm-hmm. But it was. Oh, also, this was the best issue of the series so far. Much like earlier when I said that about Justice League.
Yeah,
this is a good week.
It was a really good week. Oh, look at
the first week we've had Red Sonja come out alongside Conan, which is funny as we talked about because they're different companies, but they're the same world.
I want to make one more point about Conan before we move on. If you look at the corners and the edges of the panels, the ink goes over it.
Yes.
In a bunch of places. Man, that's nice. And I don't know if this is digital or not. Part of me hopes it isn't because I want it to be real like that. But either way, you know, it sort of blurs the line of where you can be like, oh, that's totally digital.
Well, we always like when books look like you can see the drawings. And that's something that Jason Aaron collaborators tend to do.
That's true. Isabel
Rick is one of them, does that a lot too.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's a Guerra thing for sure. Anyway, Red Sonja 2, this would have had a shot too. This was better than the first issue, which I liked a lot. Mark Russell, Mirko Kolak. I like the clever gamesmanship that is going on.
Yes.
Between Red Sonja and the Emperor, who's very funny.
I love the whole opening when he has to leave and his kid is sad and he's like, and then the wife doesn't really care. It was funny. I mean, that part was funny, but you're right. I mean, you get to see why Red Sonja is a good leader here. She totally outsmarts this guy, even though he doesn't realize it. And we don't even realize it until it's happening. And it was very clever.
That kind of sort of not trickster, that's not really the word, but the sort of clever outthinking kinds of plots are always very impressive to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the people who write Danny Ocean are much smarter than I am. Right. You know, and it's easy because they know what the outcome is going to be, but I always like that engineering of how a plan comes together, you know?
Well, and it, you know, there are clues here. Once you feel like, once you realize what's happening, you can go back and see that the Emperor gave up too much information when they had their tete-a-tete. And so she used that to formulate her plan. We didn't realize it was happening. And it was good. It was real good. And the art, the Mirko Kolak art is strong.
Yep.
It's real strong.
It is. It's
a lot of horses, which are to say.
You know, it's not really a slight against the publisher, but this is better than a lot of a lot of Dynamite books I've read by a considerable margin.
They're doing better work with their higher profile stuff.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, it's really nice. Deadly Class number 37. When this comes out, and I know it's a big deal now, I haven't seen the show, but
it's very good. I just want to say the show is surprisingly very good, and we made Lose Rick to TV because he show runs it.
Yeah, no, I get that, and I wouldn't blame him because he put in his dues and he's got it. Anyway,
I'm just saying he's very good at making television. So if we do lose him,
I mean, he should
I understand.
Be.
Yeah,
I'm unsurprised is what I mean when I say he should be. Like, that doesn't surprise me in the least.
Yeah.
What does surprise me is that he, as a relative unknown, is given the power to hold sway over something like that to prove that he could do it.
Yeah, he's a co-showrunner with a guy who's actually he's writing half the episodes and
it's the Kirkman carpet. Like, well, he did it. Let this guy do it. Either way, when Deadly Class comes out, I sometimes forget that I like it. And so I don't always look forward to reading it. And also because they're a little more spaced out now, I've lost the thread to a certain extent. However, with this issue, right away, I knew what was going on and I was back in it and I was page turning right to the end. It's great. It was a great issue.
A pretty crazy, important cliffhanger here. We talked this week all about great art and great cliffhangers. And I actually kind of yelped when it happened because, you know, I don't want to spoil it. We give them the warning, but another major character gets killed in this issue.
And it was right.
Oh, for sure.
You know, like I was like, oh, that's totally, I didn't see it coming, but that's totally the correct choice for this. Mm-hmm. It was a really good issue is basically my point.
Yeah, I mean, this is big action. This was Wes Craig at his finest, speed lines and even the sound effects having speed lines when they're really moving, and he's great. And also, I just want to point out from the TV show that they do a lot of animated sequences for like exposition backstory that are done in the Wes Craig style.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So that was really good too. Another really great book. I mean, I had it was a plethora of really great books, including Green Arrow 50, which is part of the effort.
Hefe, what does plethora mean? Sorry.
Line reduction, I assume, because this was meant to go on for a long time and all of a sudden it was canceled. So this was the final issue, which is a bummer because I feel like with the writers Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing and with Javier Fernandez, who is one of my favorite artists, and again, another comic with terrific art this week, I thought they really found their groove for the last couple of issues, and it's unfortunate. So here we have an oversized issue. I think it's a double-sized issue, and the writers wrote on this week on social media about what had happened and how they had to basically cram 50 issues of story into this final issue, and it's not exactly like that, but they had to basically take a lot of some of the concepts they wanted to explore in the next 50 issues and sort of touch on them here. And so we get a couple of characters that introduced that they were going to use, and they deal with that box that John Jones gave Oliver that he gave as safekeeping to destroy the Justice League if they ever needed to be destroyed, because they knew he would do it. And then sort of Black Canary and Oliver sort of, you know, reconcile and in a complicated way. And it just all was very high action and fast paced because they had a lot to do in double pages. And it looks great because Javier Fernandez is terrific, and I hope he lands somewhere very soon. It's a bummer. Green Arrow is sort of a cursed book in that his character was wildly changed with the New 52. With the DC Rebirth fix, they fixed a lot of it. They were also sort of hamstrung by the TV show a little bit, trying to make it like a TV show somewhat. And finally, they just sort of went off and said, no, let's just do Green Lantern stories. Green Arrow stories. And that's when it really started taking off. And unfortunately, it's over. So it's a bummer.
50 issues of Green Lantern is no small thing, or Green Arrow is no small thing, though, historically speaking.
Yeah, I mean, it's a book that's gone on many, many, many. I mean, even the Mike Grell run ran for like 5 years.
Yeah.
These 50 issues came out in, I think, 3 months.
Yeah,
did you read Cosmic Ghost Rider Destroys the Marvel Universe, the Marvel History?
No, and I also didn't get the credits right in this, and I'm sorry.
That's fine. Or the title. Cosmic Ghost Rider Destroys Marvel History, number one, co-written by the comedian Paul Scheer and Nick Giovanetti, I don't know who that is, with art by Gerardo Sandoval. And this is one of those classic Marvel humor books where some popular character at the time goes through Marvel history. It's out of continuity. It's all for fun. Really, really, really great cover by Gerardo Zaffino. And I kind of wish he had drawn the interior, because the cover is amazing.
So this is a name you're going to be hearing from us again soon, clearly, yeah. On books that no one reads.
So in this issue, because the first issue of this miniseries, we get a one-page history of Cosmic Ghost Rider, which works really well. And then Frank gets sent back in time after the recent events. It doesn't really make sense. He gets sent back in time to old Marvel, and he goes and visits his family, pretends to be Frank's uncle, because Frank's gone, hangs out with his wife and kids, and then ends up sort of messing with the creation of Fantastic Four. He ends up being the one who accidentally gives them their cosmic powers, but then joins a team, so they're the Fantastic Five. But then they fire him because he's a bloodthirsty psychopath, and it's just goofy stuff like that. But it works. It's funny. Paul Scheer, you can totally read Paul Scheer's voice in a lot of this, which I like. He's very funny. The art is okay from the guy whose name is not in the script, but it's
sorry.
It's okay. I just want to scroll all the way back to find it. It was fun. If you like Cosmic Ghost Rider and Frank Castle, it's actually a really sweet issue, because the first half he gets to hang with his kids, and he knows he has to leave them eventually. And he reveals to his son that he's a superhero, and his son freaks out. And it's a really fun story. He hates Silver Surfer. If you recall, Silver Surfer hit him in the face with Thor's hammer. So whenever he tells his son about Silver Surfer in the retelling, Silver Surfer always comes off looking really terribly. When he's telling them about the Fantastic Four formation, it's a fun Marvel romp. And in the classic Marvel way, they run into the creator, God, the creator, who is Jack Kirby, and you know, that kind of thing. But in the next issue, I don't know. That being said, I don't know if I'm going to read number two, because it was fun. It was a fun romp, and it's nothing against the creators the writers were terrific and the art was solid, but I don't know if you need more than like a one shot of this kind of story. I don't know if you need like a full miniseries.
It was a one issue stand.
It was good. It was really good. I recommend everyone read it. It's a regular size comic, but I just feel like when I finished, I was like, that was fun. And then I saw the number two and I was like, do I need another one? That'll be a game time decision. But if you like it, if you like Cosmic Ghost Rider, you should read it.
Well, there's a corner here. I thought we were going to get out of it with no corners, but fine.
This is not a circular room this week. Black Hammer 45, and we talked last week, just the ever-expanding Black Hammer universe. And this is Jeff Lemire and Ray Fox plotted, Ray Fox written, and Matt Kent drawn Black Hammer story taking place during World War II. And it's about the Black Hammer Squadron, because this is obviously, there weren't superheroes at that. Oh, there were, but not the ones we're following. They weren't around yet. So this is basically like a Marvel Universe-esque World War II in which there are superheroes and there are giant Nazi robots, and but there's also this ultra efficient brigade of pilots who go on missions, and this mission is going to go wrong because it's told in flashback as two of the people involved are old men talking about it. So it was good. Matt Kent is a terrific cartoonist. He's a very unusual style for this kind of story, but it's sort of your classic superhero World War II story. And
by the old Top Shelf crew.
I mean, what's interesting about it is the style they chose is you can totally see the watercolor paper he used for this in the background of everything. Nice.
I always like that.
You can see the texture of the paper in every page, which is fun.
I know what you mean. That's one of his moves.
Yeah, but if you know, as another expansion of the Black Hammer universe, it's a fun one. It doesn't feel like a lot of them are somewhat interconnected. Characters we see a lot, but this is totally new characters we haven't met yet. And I always like, these comic booky World War II stories because they're still grounded enough that there's stakes, but there's also giant Nazi robots and things like that, which are fun.
That's fun.
Black Hammer 45, number one. I assume this is probably a miniseries.
Yeah, there's a lot of those. I really feel like I missed the bus on it, and I was like, I'm going to get back on, and then there were like 12 series, and I was like, I can't.
Well, yeah, you missed the bus, and then suddenly it exploded into 45 books.
And now I was like, well, not now. Sorry, you did too much.
You could read this one.
Yeah.
I think it's totally unrelated to what's happening in the other books, but
sure,
for sure.
There's
and
books.
Those books we wanted to talk about. There's a lot of books. I could have talked about more, but we have a show to do. We have to move on and talk about the patron pick, which is where at patreon.com/ifanboy, which Josh mentioned earlier, everyone who joins up to become a patron can vote to add a book to the rundown. And this week, as sometimes happens, there was a tie. So we got two books here.
Yeah.
Astro Hustle number one from Dark Horse, writer Jay Nitz, art Tom Riley. Colors Ursula Decay and letters by Crank. That's our first book we're going to talk about. And much to my surprise, I actually really like this book. I really liked it. It's a miniseries and I'm probably going to read the whole thing.
I think I liked it. It was funny because right at first I was like, really, we're going to do sexy aliens? I'm going to spoil it, sorry. At least as much as I'm able. And I was really going to do sexy aliens. And I thought, that's weird. And then they all got killed. And I was like, oh, the sexy aliens are gone. I kind of got upset about it. Because a little at first I was like, really? Is that a good choice? And I thought, I'm really interested to see what they do with sexy aliens.
It's a whole 70s aesthetic. So you can tell from the title. This has got a very sort of disco-y title, the fonts. And then... as Josh said, it's sexy aliens, and the guys show up, and they've got chains and cherry chests and speedos, and there's a sexy alien orgy happening on the space ship.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Sexy alien key party.
And it's the West Village in the 70s down there.
Things go awry. There's pirates. There's sci-fi. I mean, I had a really fun time reading it, and I thought the Tom Riley art was really good.
I think the art was my favorite part, and through the whole thing, I thought, oh, this is a really nice-looking book. Again, this is the theme of the week, by the way, so if all the books look good, we're going to be happy. I lost the thread a little bit in terms of, what was actually happening. certainly after everyone was killed. And I kept meaning to the character, I guess the protagonist is Chien Andalou, which is a play on the film The Chien Andalou, but which I know is a film, but I don't remember anything about it. So I kept meaning to look that up and see like what the gag was there, but it was, I don't know. I feel like maybe it was too clever by an eighth, not a half.
So a criminal who was in like sort of sentenced to colonial exploration, which is apparently very dangerous, comes back after 60 years of suspended animation, and he is tried and sentenced to death. But then some pirates break out his cellmate, who's the pirate captain, and he ends up on a pirate ship, and then it's space pirates versus sci-fi cops, and I was like, you know what, this was fun. This was what you were talking about earlier for me, comics with a capital with an exclamation point,
right?
And it looks great. So it's only 4 issues. I'll read it.
Mm-hmm.
I had a good time reading it.
Un Chien Andalou is a 1929 Franco-Spanish silent surrealist short film by Luis Buñuel and artist Salvador Dali.
Mm.
So it's a little bit of a film school snob reference. I don't know how that necessarily relates to the character and what it is in the plot, but I knew I'd heard of it somewhere because
there are mustaches. That would be my only.
Yeah, that's true. I have a smattering of film history that is slowly going away in my head. But that's
like
a thing.
Like everything.
Yeah, it's true.
So we'll do the ratings at the end. Let's talk about the second book that was patron pick, Meet the Skrulls, number one, written by Robbie Thompson, art by Nico Henrichon. Again, really strong art.
Wow. It's going to be difficult for me to quite do this without wrecking some of what I have to say about the movie that came out. That's as much as I want to say on it. But I will go far as to say that I really very much enjoyed this. This was the Skrulls meet Tom King's vision.
Yep.
Sort of. Not even sort of. It was pretty directly related.
Yeah.
I thought it worked really well. I was very interested in the characters and the setup. And like, I'm trying to figure out. Basically, you've got a family of Skrulls and they're all trying to infiltrate whatever the various mechanisms of society that they're in. The wife works for a congressperson. Or is a congressperson? I wasn't totally clear on that.
A politician of some kind.
The husband works at Stark Industries, and the kids, the two teenage daughters' jobs are to infiltrate social circles for some reason that is not entirely clear right now. But the one daughter is totally not into it.
But they're all – it's all related to one specific
project
Blossom, which is a project apparently to – make Skrulls very easily identifiable. So they're all working the infiltration from various angles of society. They live in Hartford, Connecticut.
No, it's Stamford. They live in Stamford, which Stamford, I thought was a nice touch, which is where Stamford, Civil War started.
Yeah. And it's all very vision-y, which I understand. It's a choice.
At first, I kind of wondered, like, are these like the lost sleeper cell? Like they think the war is still going on, but it's not.
Right.
You know, that's what I kind of thought it might be at first, but it seems like that's not the case. I like the sort of world building of like, here's how the Skrulls organizationally operate, and here's what's important to them. But there's a problem that the youngest daughter was raised on Earth, so she's a little more like an Earthling, which really bothers them. We've seen that story before, but I liked it an awful lot. It looked really good, and it was fun to read, and I was like, oh, I want to know what happens next. Because, you know, the parents are, you know, they want to adhere to their ways, but they also like want their daughter to be happy. And it's just, you know, sort of it's an interesting family dynamic.
There's even sexual politics in that the wife is the higher ranked officer, but the husband's buddy is their boss. So the boss is always updating the husband as opposed to the wife. And
yeah. And it's also a little related to if you liked Ms. Marvel. I mean, this isn't a Muslim family, but there was a lot of that same kind of thing. Like, no, this is our way, you know, like, I don't want your way. So it fit in really well with a lot of the things that have been happening in Marvel, I think.
This is solid. So let's do ratings.
Ratings.
For Astro Hustle number 1 out of 5. I'm going to give it a 4.
I'll give it a 3.25 stars.
You sticking with it?
Probably not. No.
I'm going to stick with it. Good. If I remember.
I like hearing that you like a thing. Yeah.
Meet the Skrulls out of 5 ratings. I'm going to give it. I mean, it was a solid book. The writing was strong. The art was good. I'm going to give it a 3.5.
3.75 is where I'm going to go. I think four might be stepping a little bit. Next issue, we'll know if it was a four. So for right now, I'm going to go 3.75. It was strong. I enjoyed it. I'm glad that I was.
So you're sticking with it?
Yes, I am.
I don't know that I am. It's going to depend on the week. I liked it, but I don't know if it's enough to read it on a 25-week book.
Yeah, 25 book week. I get that.
So we'll see what happens. So those are the books. Patreon.com/iFanboy. If you want to vote to add a book to the rundown, good job this week, Patreon.
That is how that's supposed to work. You can do whatever you want. You can, but I thought that it was very valuable this week, both for us and you. That's my guess.
I would never have read Astro Hustle, so I'm glad. Right. You know, those are the books we want to get exposed to. But also at patreon.com/iFanboy. If you give it the $5 or higher level, you get your own superpower on the show live, sometimes made up on the spot and not prepared for.
Okay. Well, that's not the way that it's working with me. I'm going to go first, give you a little time to get your breath.
All right.
Kyle Wendell. He knows everyone's name. Not only that, but he knows how to pronounce it. There's never... Oh, and this is... Of course, that's Steve Helfenschwindel. Like, he knows everyone's name and how to pronounce them. So that is not a social awkwardness that that he's ever had to deal with, Kyle. Kyle Wendell. See, I don't even know how to pronounce it. I'm going to say Wendell, but it could be Wendler. I don't know. But Kyle would know that is the point. And it makes him really useful to have as a friend at parties, unless he uses it against you, which is also possible. But like, for example, he would know how to pronounce Joe Caramagna. Move on.
Over the years, we have pronounced it correctly.
I understand.
But like many things, when it's in your head... That's just the way it's...
Well, like, that's the thing. If you listen to the talk split that I did with him, like, I started the show and I go, I'm here with... I just need to make sure that I have your name right because I have this horrible fear of getting people's names wrong, so I don't use them. But in that, I'm just going to ask you right away. That's the best way I have to deal with it.
Good job. That's how you should do it.
Yeah.
Filippo Duilio, he attracts all the dust. So... If he could stand in the middle of a room and activate his powers and suddenly everything is dust-free. All the dust is gone from surfaces and electronics and it just...
Where does it
go?
He
tracks it all. There's a ball in front of him of dust and then he can get rid of it.
Can he turn it off and on?
Yeah, he can activate it.
Okay.
It's not like he's walking around and dust is constantly flying at him.
Yeah, because if he had an allergy, that would be... Does he have an allergy?
No.
Good.
But he's great if you have allergies. Call him over and be like, can you just get the dust out of here?
I'll tell you something. I got a dog. I got something like the dust. It just is it's unrelenting.
Yeah, I have carpet in my apartment that I can't get rid of. And it's.
Do you ever like look at the top edge of your books and you're just like, oh, these are ruined forever. And there's nothing you can do.
It's killing us. The dust is killing us.
It's true.
And it is also us, too.
Mm-hmm. It's true. We're killing ourselves. You know, Kevin Carpenter, I'm going to try to explain this as best I can. You know that character in Grant Morrison's X-Men who's basically his mutant thing is that he's a chicken?
Yes.
Kevin Carpenter is a human hybrid cardinal.
So,
Red Bird.
Yes, I'm familiar. What part of him is human? What part of him is cardinal?
I mean, he basically appears like an anthro.
Humanoid-shaped cardinal.
Yeah. So
red plumage and the cardinal head.
Beautiful, beautiful plumage. But because of this, I thought I would share with you some facts about cardinals.
Okay. This is exciting for me.
Many people are perplexed each spring by the sight of a cardinal attacking its reflection in a window, car mirror, or shiny bumper. Apparently, this is the thing that happens. So, both males and...
Wait, does Kevin constantly attack himself in the mirror?
Hold on.
Like he goes to shave in the morning.
Both male and females do this, most often in the spring and early summer, because they're obsessed with defending their territory against intruders. They may spend hours fighting these intruders without giving up. A few weeks later, as aggressive hormone levels subside, the attack should end. So really, April to July, he can't.
You gotta keep Kevin away from reflective services.
Yeah. Did you know that the cardinal is the state bird of 7 states?
I did not know that.
Yeah. There's more. It's like Springfield.
One more fact.
Only a few North American songbirds sing. But the female northern cardinal does it often while sitting on her nest, and this may give the male information about when to bring food to the nest. And the mated pairs share song phrases, but the female may sing a longer or more complex song than the male.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Also, her song serves as text message. We need
sure. Ugh, you know when you get those texts, like, I know, just stop.
I'm already checking out.
Fine, I'll go back in.
Ethan, what is Ethan LJ?
Yeah, it was all his, or I mean, his name could be Ethalge. Let's ask Ethalge. Kyle.
It could be Ethan L, and then his last name is J. There's many opportunities here. We'll call him Ethalge.
Ethalge, will you go see un chien andalou avec moi, s'il vous plaît?
Ethalge can go to the bathroom at his leisure. Meaning,
go on.
He's never in a situation where he's like, I don't know, at a 2.5 hour Marvel movie and it's had 4 teas and it's just like, you know, rocking back and forth and doing everything mentally he can. Ethan never feels the pressure. He goes, yeah, I'll just, and then he just goes when he needs to.
So he would, you're saying that he just gets up and leaves whatever he's doing and he's not worried about it?
No, I'm saying he has the bodily control where it's never a problem. There's no pressure. There's no, he's just like, he may have a full bladder, but it doesn't bother him. When he goes to the bathroom, he may be full bladder. But he doesn't like, he's never bothered by it.
Is there, while he's not feeling
is
it.
Is there ever an emergency? Doesn't get, you know, there's never like, oh God, I got to find a bathroom emergency. It's just like, he's fine.
Nothing like the New York City street bathroom emergency. Because everyone who lives there knows some emergency receptacles that are available at least around their offices.
Oh, you have to have a couple of places.
The
Ethan's always fine.
Yeah, the hotels are a good choice. Grand Central High. Ethan does not need to know these things.
If you gotta have a couple of bars, you know, you can run into.
Yep, yep. That's true. Boy, you're not kidding about those Marvel movies. I was
fanboy. That's where you can go at the $5 higher level, get your own superpower or any level and vote for the patron pick, and we do appreciate that. Thank you very much. We'll be announcing our next hangout soon.
Cool.
Email time. Which one should we do?
I think we can do both real quick.
Okay.
I think we can.
Ken from the Great White North says, hey, I have an Amazon gift card, want to buy a trade paperback of one of the great runs in comic book history, but I want something pre-Watchmen Dark Knight Returns. So basically anything from the 1930s to the early 1980s. What should I get? Don't be afraid to go off the beaten path. Thanks, hoser.
We did it. We reduced it to the most basic, uninteresting stereotype.
Well, I just read a book, and there's a lot of stories about SCTV in it, so it's on my brain. Okay.
Yeah.
Pre-Watchmen, so pre-86.
It's a good it's a really good question, and I was like, I hope Connor can answer this, because I'm blanking a little bit, because I think there's a lot of that stuff that I know about, but I don't know that I've read enough of it.
Well, I mean, there's classic stuff like the 70s S.H.I.E.L.D. run by Steranko.
Yeah, I've read that. I'd say, you know, like, to me, it's a treasure trove of, like, you know, Kirby and Lee on the first 50-something issues of Fantastic Four. They did 110, I think. But
I mean, there's the entire Silver Age, which is the birth of modern comics, Marvel's birth, you know, the modern. I mean, there's a lot there.
Right. So
that's the easy one.
Let's nail this down. I'm going to say the Kree-Skrull War. The Avengers. His late 60s. It's Roy Thomas and I forget. But we read it and talked about it on our video show a long time ago.
Yeah, sure.
It's also very relevant to what we're doing now.
Published in 1971.
Yeah, there you go. I just had another one that just disappeared. That Steranko S.H.I.E.L.D. thing is a really good one.
Hard Traveling Heroes is the classic one.
Ooh, that's a really good one.
Neil Adams and
Denny O'Neill.
Dick Giordano on inks. That's the classic road trip across America with Hal Jordan and Oliver Queen as Oliver Queen opens Hal's eyes to the struggle of the colors, not just the green man or the yellow man, but the black man.
I think that even though it's sort of related to the 1986 thing, there's a lot of value in reading early Alan Moore stuff. If you were to go read, if you could find Miracle Man, Marvel Man, and get through that stuff, I think that's super interesting stuff. You know, like I'd find there's collections of them, but there's like Wally Wood EC comics and things like that. There's old war comics that Joe Kubert did. The Death of Captain Marvel. That was the one I was trying to think of. Jim Starlin.
Oh, yeah.
That stuff's really good. But when was Man of Steel? That's after 86.
Yeah, that was post-crisis.
Dark Phoenix Saga. Dark Phoenix Saga.
New Gods.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's great. Kirby's Orion, New Gods. There's a bunch of spinoffs from that kind of thing. I would say, you know, Kraven's Last Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing Spider-Man stuff. A lot of those Amazing Spider-Man runs.
If you get Bronze Age collections, I mean, there's a lot of them out
there. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
DC put out a lot of big omnibus collections recently. So you can, there's just, you know, the original Justice League comics and old Avengers books.
I really tend to think, and I know I'm not, it's not like the best, but you can actually find these things collected by this, but I tend to think, go find what the masters did. You know, like read Ditko's Doctor Strange. Read, Eisner's A Contract with God. That's a really good one, actually, to read. You know, anything you can find that Joe Kubert did, if you think about the fact that, like, he helped train all these artists that came after it.
There's good stuff. The Bronze Age is a really interesting and fertile time.
Yeah.
It's stuck between the Silver Age and then the encroaching modern comics. Yeah. I mean, Hard Traveling Heroes is a very modern story told in the Bronze Age. And then the Silver Age is great too. If you like that sort of pulpy sci-fi, it's all very sci-fi infused. And so if you like that.
Do they still do the greatest Batman stories ever? Like, is that still in print?
I mean, I don't know if it's in print, but they did that at one point.
Yeah. Like the greatest Batman stories ever told and the greatest Joker stories ever told. Those were huge for me when I was younger, like in just sort of seeing bits from everything.
It gives you like a overview of the different ages. They did a couple of Batman volumes, Joker, and they did Batgirl, I think, as well.
I have one of those Marvel omnibuy of Jack Kirby's Captain America when he came back to Marvel. He wrote and drew Captain America on his own.
Yeah.
The story's wacky. It's all over the place, but it's gorgeous to look at. Henry Kissinger's one of the main characters. It's weird. like basically everything that happened came after that. You know, like it was, Sergeant Rock. If you find Sergeant Rock comics, those are great.
Oh, for sure. Great old war comics.
Yep. Russ Heath, I think, did those.
Yeah. Russ Heath for sure.
Yep.
So there's a lot of great stuff there, pre-86. I mean, the comics did not start in 86 or get good in 86. They've been good the entire time. So you can find a lot of great stuff from that pre-Watchmen modern comics era.
100%.
Blake writes and says, I was wondering if either of you have strong memories or perhaps moments in history more generally that are tied to any comics or comics-related events. I've been thinking about this during the run-up to Captain Marvel, so several months, and how my daughter was born the day after my wife and I saw the Avengers in the theaters. Because of that, the Avengers will always have a special place in my memory. I also like to joke that this is why my daughter has a preternatural affinity for Captain America. And he sent some photos of her dressed as Captain America, which
she's adorable.
Do you? I hope you do.
I do. I have lots of them. I mean, with us, like so many things are related to. If I just think about, you know, people that we met, things that we did at shows, things that are comics related, but more specifically, it's really funny because you were just talking about the bathroom thing in the Marvel movies. And I very specifically remember that when I went to see the first Iron Man, we had just started doing iFanboy full time a couple of months before that. So it was all very new. And that was also right after I got my dog, who was a puppy at that point. And I had never had a dog before. And it was the longest that I had ever left the house with and left him home alone. And I was super anxious about that. And then also I had to pee for like the whole second half of that movie. And so at the end of it, and this is the first time we've ever seen those post-credit sequences.
Yeah.
And so I knew I had to sit there and wait. And it's the middle of the day in Queens. And I'm just sitting there and I'm worried about my dog and I have to pee. I'm like, what am I fucking watching through this credit? And then, you know, Nick Fury shows up and it's a thing. But like, I will never forget that. Like, I feel like I have to pee when I watch that movie, and then I feel affection towards my dog. That's the first thing that I think.
Like, Marvel credits are so long, you can run out, go to the bathroom, come back in time.
I didn't know that then. There was no precedent. Last night I saw Captain Marvel, and I Googled. I was like, is there a second credit sequence? Because I don't know if I have to sit here because I really want to go home.
There always is.
Yeah, I know. I know there is now. I don't know that one was worth it, but
I always remember you having to drop out of the show at the last minute when your first kid was born.
Yeah.
So I think you even had the pick?
I did.
Or was that when you had appendicitis?
I had the pick of the week. It was Judd Winnick's Power of Shazam miniseries. It was the pick. And then between the pick that I wrote and the show that was to be recording, Lindsay went into labor with the first boy.
That's right. So I remember twice in our history, the person with the pick of the week couldn't do the show.
Uh-huh.
And it was both you.
Yeah.
It was one you had appendicitis and one you had a kid, both involved in the hospital. And so
that's what it takes to keep me off the show, people.
I remember Ron and I having to be like, so I guess will we just read his review? Like, how are we gonna do this? So I don't remember what we did, but stuff like that.
Well, I will,
any big life events, I can't remember anything like that around town.
I think it's hard sometimes to pin them to specific things, but like I remember reading, this is going to sound egotistical, but I used to read my books in Grand Central Station.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go over to Midtown Comics on 42nd. No, it's not 42nd. It was on Lexington.
That one.
Yeah. The one up by Grand Central, basically, because it was closer to me than going to Midtown. And then I'd read my comics around there somewhere. A lot of times I would go down to Grand Central, get something to eat and read comics down there. And I remember, opening up one of those and seeing like our ad, because we did a deal with DC Comics then. Mm-hmm. We traded. I don't literally remember what we gave them for that, but they put our ad in there. And I was just sitting there like looking around like, does anybody else see this? Like, it was right there. A lot of times panels and things remind me of stuff that we did video shows on, because
mm-hmm.
we had to spend so much time with those. So it's not like a comic issue. I could always, every time I look at like a bad Green Lantern or a story like that that has something to do with like all the different Lantern Corps, I'm like, I was right about Black Lanterns. Or every time I think about
this. It's hard because for me, I've always read comics.
Yeah.
So I don't really, I mean, there's sort of always, you can almost pick any life event and comics have been somewhere nearby. So it's hard to say like, oh, I remember this because this happened, but.
I remember moments of reading them in different places with different things going on, but I don't always remember what that book was.
Right.
I remember reading Watchmen in my dorm room our senior year. It wasn't a dorm. It was like dorm apartment things. And you were in and out while I was reading it.
That's right.
And it was sort of the first time. You know what? Actually, it's Justice League number one. Grant Morrison's Justice League number one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think Jared, our mutual friend, sort of like, you need to read this, you know?
That's right.
And then again, that's where you were way into it. And I remember like later that year, or it was the next year, was Peter David's Aquaman run. And he had a big scraggly beard and he was mad at everything. And you were going through a rough time. And so you had a scraggly beard too. And you went through your like your grizzled Aquaman phase. I always think of that.
Had that cover taped to my wall.
I remember going to that comic shop in Ithaca with you and Ron and whoever else was in our crew around that time and buying Mark Miller's Flash issues. And that was the first, and then later Mark Waid's. And that was the first time that I got introduced to those characters in that Rogues Gallery. And I always think of that whenever I see Reverse Flash, Professor Zoom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then also the Black Razor, who's I know now is a Kirby character. But you know, I those characters always make me think. Literally, whenever I see Professor Zoom, it takes me right back to that comic shop with you guys. Walt Simonson's Thor.
I mean, there's a lot. Comics are, since they come out all the time, mm-hmm. and they're never not coming out, they're constantly attached to places and time and things.
Yeah.
Different than other media. I mean, I obviously have memories around going to the movies or watching a TV show with friends or whatever, but because comics have always been there, I can, you know, certain comics we can think of college, certain comics we can think of junior high school.
I remember the three of us walking out of Spider-Man 3, like, what the fuck are we supposed to do with that?
Going back to your house and recording the podcast, yeah.
Yep. I remember us standing in line, the three of us and Lindsay, to go see 300. It was like in the middle of the day.
Mm-hmm.
I went with you to a lot of them in those times.
Yeah, we both lived in New York. Yeah, I remember going to see Jonah Hex and we came out and we're like, oh, jeez.
Oh, and the amazing Punisher Warzone friends and family screening. But like everybody was like, oh, no.
This is terrible.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of comics memories because there's a lot of comics and And good times, good times. So thanks to Blake and Ken for writing in. Contact@ifanboy.com is how you do it. Get on the show. And if you want to hear more, as Josh mentioned, Captain Marvel, we did a Captain Marvel podcast. It's right behind the show on the feed. You can find it there. Me and Josh and Ryan Haupt talked about the film, and you'll find out what we thought, and we'll find out what we thought on back on the feed.
Yeah, absolutely. You can also listen to the conversation I had with letterer and writer and artist Joe Caramagna. You'll see his name almost pretty – not even almost. Every single week in your comics, you're going to see his name. But maybe you didn't know anything about what it's like to be a comic book letterer or how you get there. Joe's a really good guy, and he was really fun to talk to. And you should go listen to that show if you haven't. I a little part of me thinks you're not going to listen to this because it's not, you know, Grant Morrison or whatever. But to me, the folks who are making comics, and this is a guy who's like, his thing is that he's really just happy to be making a living making comics. He loves being involved with making comics. And that kind of enthusiasm, I think, is so heartening and refreshing. So I really dug talking to him. And if you haven't checked that out, I really recommend that you do.
Well, one of the favorite shows we ever did for the video was when we did Chris Oyopoulos.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's interesting to get a different perspective on things. And those guys also usually have been around forever and know everybody. So it's a
– yeah.
They've got great stories.
He really like – I know Chris Oyopoulos is a great guy. Like, I know it. But Joe sort of explained another couple of reasons that he is. And I thought that was a really, really fascinating bit of that too.
Head over to fanboy.com. You can find all those podcasts there, as well as all of our old shows, and some of our old written content is there as well. And you can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/ifanboy and following @ifanboy on Twitter. And some eagle-eyed social media users have noticed that we soft launched an Instagram account about a month ago. We didn't want to fully announce it on the show until we sort of played with it a little bit, decided how we were going to use it. So one of the main things we do is we announce the pick there, obviously, in the shows that we do, but also on Thursdays and Fridays, we've been returning to our Best of the Week in Panels feature, and that's found exclusively on our Instagram account at @ifanboycomics. So you can go there now if you haven't seen it yet, and there's weeks worth of Best of the Week in Panels happening there. We don't know how many we do each week. We don't know who's going to do them. There's always a couple at least. Some weeks are heavier than others, but we have a fun time doing that on Instagram at @ifanboycomics. So go there. Give it a follow. Check it out. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. And also individually at J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram, and at C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram.
If you like this show, you can go to iTunes and you can leave a rating. You can leave a whole review. That's how it gets done. And do that for our show. Do that for other shows. Don't do that for Around Comics. but don't. I mean,
we never left you. They left you.
It's true. We literally can't stop. I don't know. We've tried. One time or another, one of us made a run for it, but it didn't take.
And that person saw a movie, and that movie convinced them to stay.
Yep.
I saw that movie on TV the other day, and I thought about it.
So do that, or better yet, I'm seeing it. I'm not saying that this is working, but it seems like it. I feel like I'm seeing recommendations a lot on the Twitter. For folks who are like, hey, what should I listen to? And whenever somebody just says, oh, man, I've been listening to this show for a decade, I'm very touched by that. And I think it says something to other people. And then every time I think, I hope that other person likes it. I totally think that.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
And I think, oh, they're not going to like it. That's what I thought. Like, they're not going to get it. They're going to think, what is this crap? But I so appreciate when you folks do that. We both do. So that's how it works. That's what we need your help on. Not a big ask. And that'll do.
That's it for this week's show. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
See you next week.
Good art. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.